Live from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
All right, everyone, thank you for joining us for another great week of the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show. My name's Alon.
And my name's Ara.
And we also have a guest in the studio today. Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Scott.
Scott of?
Game Truck.
Game Truck. By the way, GameTruck.com, not your website.
No, I know. Some computer in Malaysia owns it. We tried to grab that. We've made multiple attempts to get it. Our website is GameTruckParty.com.
All right. Fantastic. So we'll talk about that in a minute. I want to do some housekeeping first and sort of discuss some things that happened to me this week. Primarily that I got my iPhone updated to 2.0 and I'm playing some of the games from the App Store. I definitely want to talk about that later. My feelings on the games that I've played thus far.
Yeah, I can tell you a few things about my feelings.
Yeah, I wish that Rich were here. Again, every week he's late to the show. It's very unprofessional for us.
he's kind of like the renegade.
I want him to play these games without my telling him what I think about them.
You don't want to taint his opinion.
Well, exactly.
Because then we'll just be saying the same thing over and over.
Well, with you, I told you what I felt before you got the chance to play Monkey Ball and Crash Bandicoot. But
yeah, but anyway. As we all know, it's impossible for my opinion to ever be biased. Right?
Of course. All right, so I've been playing that, and so I want to talk about that a bit. But we also, we've got Scott from Game Truck and GameTruckParty.com, and we're going to talk a little bit about what the Game Truck is. I know that I've actually seen it out in the wild before, so we'll have that discussion. And then you had a couple of topics that you wanted to throw out.
As always.
There's one. This is a listener submitted topic suggestion, right?
Yes, we love getting emails and stuff from listeners, and even more than that, we love it when they actually give us topics because then it's less work for us.
That's certainly true. And so, what are we going to be discussing there?
So, our favorite listener who goes by Pen15. Is he asked this several weeks ago, do you think games or gamers should be allowed to only experience what they specifically enjoy about games? Right. So basically, should you be able to do whatever the F you want? Or is it more about, okay, the game designer is the author of the game and he's going to tell you what to do? Or you're just going to be subject to, you know, whatever is his privy?
So I'm interested in that. Have we actually talked about that? Have we touched on it at some point? I feel like we've...
I'm sure we have.
I feel like we said we wanted to talk about it at one point and never did.
And then we definitely did that too, so...
All right. And then there's also Penny Arcade stuff that I need to talk about. Last week I suggested that it will happen, right? And so I want to start... All right, for those who don't already know, I'm just assuming everyone listened to our last show. I'm going to do the Family Feud game show event again at the Penny Arcade Expo, which is in a month. I guess like a month from today. Starts on a Friday. So anyway, we're going to be doing that there, and I need to develop questions for this Family Feud game show. And for those who are not familiar with the Family Feud, several of the questions are, it's all survey-based. You ask 100 people or however many people a question, and then the answers are basically just from their responses. So it might be like, what's your favorite video game character? Or name five weapons that are found in a video game, or name rather a weapon, something like that. So I would love to get some listener submissions of questions that I should use in the Family Feud game show event coming up next month at PAX. And certainly if you're going to be at the Penny Arcade Expo, let us know. I would love to see you at there. We can get you a nice seat up front for the event. Chatterbox listeners, I actually never really thought about doing that, but it'd be fun. So anyway, email me, Alon@chatterboxgameshow.com, and let me know what you think should be asked for the Penny Arcade Family Feud event, because I could use some help on that. I don't want it to be just my creativity flowing.
I can give you some questions.
Flowing like a drip faucet. Yeah. All right, so let's get to it. Scott, we've got several minutes, actually, before the break, so let's talk about the Game Truck. Ara, this is actually someone that you know from the past, right? Like, I was only just introduced to Scott.
Yes. Ironically enough, as everyone knows, or maybe some of you don't know, I used to work at Rainbow, and Scott used to run Rainbow, actually.
By run, does that mean like president, CEO? What are the levels of organization?
There's like a big gear in one of the rooms, and he just kept turning it.
Yeah, the big wheel. Studio general manager. So it was, I joined Rainbow in 99. As at that time, I had left Motorola, so I was a little too uptight to say vice president of games. So I said vice president of engineering because that was very serious. And some of the guys I worked with could probably remember when I finally broke down and started playing games at work, which was, you know, cardinal sin from a big corporate background.
Really? Isn't that pretty much standard operation at a games company?
Yeah, but I didn't come from a games company. It was all new to me, right? I was sort of the, I joked that I ran daycare, you know, it was kind of like, come in and be the grown up on site and,
the den mother.
The den mother.
Okay.
Really what I did, you know, it was a small, to call it a startup, was it'd been in business for quite a while. It had experienced some success. I came on board, with formal management training. You can't see me, but I'm doing the quoting thing. It was a phenomenally talented group of people, and it was a great experience to get involved in it. And basically I did business development and help it grow. So I ran it and we grew it from, I think when I joined it, there were about 8 to 10 people, might have been 12 people working on Motocross Madness 2, and a group of, this was interesting, some Koreans that had come over to work on Tiger Woods Golf, and then 20 guys trying to be the next Pixar. Over the next 4 years, we grew it to probably 100 people. We had 4 game teams that were running concurrently doing PlayStation 2. We did ATV Off-Road Fury. Very successful studio, and they sold it to THQ really 2001. And so, yeah, I ran the shop.
So you stayed there after the THQ bought it?
Yeah, it was kind of one of those funny things where the CEO who was brought on board to help really package the business up and sell it, who did a phenomenal job, a guy named Jock Patton, had told me after they sold it, he's like, you need to leave before they hate you and you hate them, because that's how acquisitions go. And I like to say, I ran it right up to the ragged edge. You know, I was there 2005. I think April 2006, I left. And it was one of those neat experiences of, I didn't really need to dive into anything right away. It was just sort of like, okay, what am I going to do next? What do I want to do? And they're great guys. You know, it was like, okay, I've done this for a while. This is now something completely different than what it was I started. I like to build things. And I came up with this idea, Game Truck. And at the same time, so to give you a little bit of my background, the Walt Disney Company came and sort of tracked me down and said, we want to start a handheld studio in Salt Lake. I'm like, I don't want to go to Salt Lake, but I want to start a new studio. That sounds like fun. And I had started Game Truck already by then, and I thought, wow, keep the day job, good idea. And so I figured I could pull both off, and I did. So I shuttled back and forth to Salt Lake, and I worked for the Walt Disney Company getting Fallline Studio off the ground. Great group of guys up there. And my next mission after we got that up and running was to go to Florida and start a studio in Florida. And
was that because it was near the Disney people?
Yeah, for Disney.
Okay.
And so, but they bought Junction Point in Austin, Texas. They decided to buy an existing studio rather than start a new one. And by the time that all came together late last fall, Game Truck was taken off. And I went, you know what? I've never run and owned my own business. I'm going for it. So I've been here full time since really last October timeframe doing Game Truck.
All right. So we've got about a minute left. Can you summarize before the break what exactly Game Truck is? Because we haven't even discussed it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Sorry. It's really the ultimate media room on wheels. So what we did is we built 450-inch plasma screens, 20-foot couch, self-powered, air-conditioned, every video game console, and we only do multiplayer games. So it's all linked together. It's a turnkey LAN party in a box.
So someone pays you for some party event, you bring the truck to them, it gets attention, exposure, and then people go inside and just play.
Yep.
All right. So I'm going to want to hear how this became successful and the kind of clients that you actually have, because to be quite honest, initially I would think that this would fail. So I want to hear how it became successful, and we'll talk about that after the break.
Absolutely.
Listening to Arizona's News Talk leader, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Hey.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio, and Rich has decided to join us finally.
This game sucks.
I had him play Super Monkey Ball.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that game, I think, a lot in a little bit, based on our 5-minute playing time.
It doesn't make sense. When it's flat, it's like skyrocketing forward.
That's your fault. Start from the beginning instead of throwing in the middle of a level. But before we talk about that...
It's flat on the table, and it's running forward. Flat equals forward?
Listen, maybe it's... Maybe it auto...
Maybe the game sucks.
Here's a game truck cup to calm you down.
All right. We'll talk about that later.
A pencil and a sticker.
We still got Scott from Game Truck to talk to.
No tattoos?
Well, you threw out a good comment I'd like to respond to. Boy, that seemed like that should be a failure.
Yeah, but wait. Before we get into that, yes. I need to mention our fantastic sponsor, UAT, the University of Advancing Technology. I actually went there just 2 days ago to try and get something done. Anyway, you should visit uat.edu to learn more about the University of Advancing Technology and what they can offer you as a potential student. Right, Rich?
Yeah, how do you turn the sound off on this thing?
Yeah, notice how he artfully dodged that, whatever you were trying to convey.
And then I also just want to point out that you need temporary tattoo stickers with Game Truck, and then I'm sold.
We actually have them, and my wife thought, there's no way you guys would like temporary tattoos.
Are you kidding me?
So I pulled them out of the cups.
I'd put them all over my back.
I pulled them out of the cups. We have them.
All right. Rich is selling advertising.
I'm sold.
Let's
do it.
You're there.
Let's go.
All right. So right before the break, I did mention to Scott, and I didn't mean any offense by this.
No, none at all.
It's just I have a lot of businesses in my brain. I did the whole business school thing, and so I think about new businesses all the time. And the idea of having to pay for a very large truck and then expensive equipment and then having people only be able to get access to it and therefore pay you to use it on like a contractual basis for a temporary, for a short period of time seems to me like the sort of thing that wouldn't naturally flourish. But I'm very happy that it has, and I'd like to hear the story about it.
Well, I mean, one of the things, probably the things you're talking about are why I was one of the first, I think I was the first guy to think of it. We have a patent pending on the concept. What it started from was, I don't know if you have kids or not, but if you've been to a 4 or 5 or 6 year old birthday party recently,
I haven't been to those, even though they weren't my children.
I think the kindly they could be referred to like hell on earth, purgatory. I was at my son's 4th birthday and I was at a pizza arcade, not to be named, the Family Entertainment Center, and It was horrible experience, right? We're chasing kids everywhere. It's crowded. Somebody swiped my son's tickets. Hostess is nowhere to be seen. My friends are there, but we can't talk to each other because we're chasing our kids around. And it was the video games that put me over the top. I'm like, these are terrible. I think I played Star Wars Trilogy when I was 7. I mean, where are the games? What happened? I knew what we were working on Xbox and 360 and Next Gen was way better than anything in the arcade. There had to be a way to fix that. And so I spent a year trying to figure out how to fix that, and you can't. And this is where you had said, "Oh, home video games killed the arcades." I didn't actually say that
for the record. You kind of extrapolated that. I made.
I'm good at that.
All right.
Can we sensationalize innocent comments?
Like you said, it was already dying, but I just thought it made it even easier to be dead when the people were playing good games at home.
The couple of things that all happened at once that I thought there might be an opportunity in the market was that. Arcades got greedy. They were making money hand over fist on the same kind of machines. They saw that people would get a favorite game, and they just stopped buying new games.
You know what was really interesting, actually? Like, near the time when the arcades were dying, and I think at least to me, this is part of why I think that they failed, was that the kind of games you saw near the end of that cycle was that, like, these huge deluxe machines, right?
Oh, yeah.
That you sat in, and you paid, like, $1. So now all of a sudden, like, I never understood why they did this, like, as a consumer, right? It's like the entry fee has been, like, quadrupled or more.
They got greedy. People were paying it.
And your game experience now is like, it wasn't, if you're really good, you could play for a while. You play for a minute.
Yeah.
Right? And then it's over regardless of what happened.
And they had a problem, too, that maybe they weren't as much greedy as they overreacted to, we have to deliver you an experience you can't have at home. That was like an arcade mantra. Now, have you guys ever read Freakonomics?
No, but I would argue that that's been the mantra from the beginning. Like, video games didn't exist at home, in the late 70s.
Well, that's where you had Pong, ColecoVision, Atari. These things all existed during the same times that arcades were flourishing.
But the arcade was always a step ahead of your home technology.
And that's where the big money was at. And you had developers making stuff for that environment. And the reason I brought up Freakonomics is sometimes unrelated things can have very significant impacts. When I was 12, my mom kicked me out of the house and I wasn't allowed to come home until the streetlights came on. We had a generation of kids that had nowhere to go, and they went to arcades and filled those machines full of quarters. And I personally believe the pictures of missing kids and milk cartons changed this country forever. Nobody does that with their kids anymore. Absolutely nobody. You always have to know where your kids are, and you can see the evidence of that on macro trends in the explosion in youth sports. I mean, how many baseball leagues, conferences, teams, huge business, hockey. I mean, anything we can do to keep our kids contained and safe, everybody does. Nobody just turns our kids loose and lets them go anywhere. So several things all collided at once. The consumer, the guys that put the most money in the arcades, stopped going. They just died off. The arcade stopped buying new machines. If you're a developer, what are you going to do? You got to survive. Now Nintendo comes in. It was always in the background, but now it's like, that's what we have to do to survive. You had, I'm blanking on their name because they flamed out. Turok, who was the publisher?
Acclaim
was bigger than EA at the time when they got the rights to publish SNES. They were huge.
To publish what?
Oh, on the SNES, right? So they had Mortal Kombat. I mean, they had all sorts of games. They were monstrous, right? That's where the developers turned into. So you have all these independent developers springing up. The consoles opened up the battle to let more people could develop because now you don't have to build this arcade cabinet. So it was kind of like, I don't know, it's a stretch to say like the internet, but the barrier to entry drops, the market opens up, and the arcades are going, we're not buying anything and people aren't coming in anymore. So while they sort of drop off, home consoles explode. And then that drives a whole bunch of other factors. The next one becomes, if you got to convince somebody to pay $50 to $60 for a product, it can't be a 2 to 3 minute experience. So now games have turned into 20, 30 minute experience. You know, put a tombstone on the arcades. They're not coming back. Is that what they need to make money, 2 to 3 minute pick up and play experience that somebody can punch a quarter into and they can turn a profit on an affordable box. Nobody's making content like that anymore, and the audience for it, to be honest, isn't really around. There's been a lot of very clever businesses that have tried to sort of hide the fact you're paying a dollar for a game or try to create an exciting environment for a game. But as kids going into enjoy an arcade, the things that maybe you didn't find annoying today, as the guy paying, I found, and my friends found, incredibly annoying. The crowds, the noise, the distraction, the cost, waiting in line, this is tired content, what are we doing? So I looked at trying to, for a year, how do I make better games for the arcades? And what flipped for me was when a friend of mine, who's an adult, dragged his Xbox off to do another LAN party in his house. And it was like, God, that's a lot of work. That must just be an awesome experience to go to that effort. I'm like, what if the real idea is, we make the ideal arcade for home video games? What would that be? And it has to capture what was magic about being in the arcade, hanging out with your friends, playing the best games, and playing together. So we built my garage. I was with Sean Bell I was actually going to do a different company because I'd given up on the arcade idea. Oh, I'm sorry. I tapped. Long and short of it, instead of going into this video editing company idea I had, I ran off to Home Depot, bought plywood, set it up, went to Costco, bought every kind of TV, and I built in my garage a prototype game truck.
Sweet.
And it was this idea. And what we did is we invited friends and family over to sit down and play, and we talked about it. And it was a neighborhood kid who was 12 years old. His name is Daniel Garland. He and his dad had come down, and we were playing, and I'm like, do you think this would make a great birthday party? And his eyes got as big as saucers, and he went, oh, my God, this would be the greatest birthday party ever. And what hit me is there's this explosion in jumpies, inflatables, bouncy castles, everything.
Especially in Phoenix.
Especially in Phoenix. Florida, Texas, it's nationwide. It's huge. Is what do you do with those kids after they're too old for jumpies? They're too young to drive, and they're too old. What do you do with them? And the moms are stuck. They don't know what to do with those kids. They have plenty of solutions for girls, but they don't have as many choices for boys. So we put together a game truck, and we threw our first party, and it pretty much was viral and spread like wildfire.
And so you market it I guess it would have to be marketed to a party. It's not just corporate events, though. It's a lot of just moms and dads.
We actually spent the first 2 years doing no corporate marketing. It was only moms and dads. We focused exclusively on birthdays. And what we did is we focused on what moms needed. Kids are contained. They're entertained. They're playing the best multiplayer games with their friends in an exclusive environment where other people don't wander into it. And kids love it, and the parents love it, because it's a super easy party for them. It's effortless.
All right. I like that. I love all the business analysis.
I find all this fascinating.
I don't know if our listeners love it, but I do. Anyway, we're going to go to break. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
It's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's number one. Woohoo!
We're back once again, Chatterbox Video Game Radio, with all of us.
Fantastic.
Alon and Rich and Ara.
Woo!
Yes. And Scott.
I'm restraining myself.
Yes.
Still here.
So we've been talking about the game truck and how it actually turned out to be successful, which I had said I wouldn't have expected. So I'm certainly very happy to hear that. And it's very competitively priced when you compare to what a parent might pay for a party for their kid. You get a couple hours for, what, like a few $100? Less than that?
It's just around $300. We did a lot of, before we built it and launched it, we did a lot of market surveys, like what it cost to entertain 12 to 16 kids anywhere in town for 2 to 3 hours. And that was how we came up with the pricing. And when we ran the business model and we did it, the other trend we saw was that what's called event-driven businesses is that if you have a retail space, you're paying rent every single day. If you're, say you open a sandwich shop, you got to pay somebody to stand there every single day. You got to have food every day. But in event-driven business, you really only incur cost when something's happening. And so we knew this would probably be, compared to other types of businesses, maybe lower revenue, but higher margin, because we would have a much lower cost structure.
Well, yeah, your capital is not there at all. Your rent is, I guess that's not capital, but
yeah,
your rent
negligible.
Is non-existent.
It's really the truck. It's like the cost of a limousine.
So have you moved to a house with a bigger parking lot outside?
Yeah, I started the first one that was parked in my driveway for a long time, and then we moved into secure RV, and then now we have what I call the big garage. So we got a fleet of trucks, and we park them in the big garage.
Sweet. I'm totally going there.
Let's do it.
To the garage. Like, I'll just come to you. Don't worry. You don't have to come down to me. I will make it there. Now, have you ever had somebody sign up and have multiple trucks?
Yeah, that was one of the, when we started getting multiple trucks, that was one of the first things that we realized we could do was really throw some interesting parties. And we've done a bunch where we've had two or three trucks on site. Probably the biggest thing was when we got hooked into the graduation party circuit. You know, there's a big drive to keep, you know, kids from high school, you know, locked up the night that they graduate so they don't go kill themselves.
Yeah, no drinking.
Right. And we had a bunch of those where we rolled two or three trucks up, and the kids played all night.
All right. Well, I'm fascinated. Any questions, Rich?
Not really.
Before I ask you about Super Monkey Ball.
Quite interesting. I mean, it's all, like Alon said, like when I first heard about it, I was just kind of thinking, man, how do you succeed with that business? Like, it just, but I mean, I guess like you said, you've really taken off with kids parties and stuff like that. And I'm thinking like, I'm a 21-year-old, like, maybe that's not at the top of my list of things I'd want to do, but maybe if I actually got with a huge group of friends and we actually played in a truck for 2 hours, it'd be a lot more fun than it sounds initially.
Rich, I guarantee you, if I told you and Johnny that we're going to get a game truck next weekend.
Oh, I know. I'd be like, yes, let's do it.
You would mark off the day.
I'd be like, let's get the tattoos on and let's...
Well, it kind of goes back to what you said, Alon, about there's an attraction to the arcade, and there's the thing that I call social video gaming. It is fun to play together with your friends, mm-hmm. especially in person. It was one of the things we could do at the studio all the time, is that we always had the ability to pull a LAN together or have a bunch of guys in a room or set up machines and play together. And it was just...
Even when the game's not so good.
Even when the game's not so good.
Seriously,
yeah.
It's true.
But, you know, the social interaction would make up for it. It's great to get that instantaneous feedback and reaction and know what's going on. And that's what we've really created, is that environment. Like I say, it's the truck's the big obvious thing, but we're really an entertainment company. And it's about delivering that great social experience around video games, which, you know, God, yeah. We all love to play.
I mean, what you're saying has been proven with all of the games that have been successful lately. Certainly Xbox Live is a major appeal because, or has appeal because of the social gaming that it adds. Unfortunately, it means that I spend less time actually having real LAN events with my friends that I used to have in the days of the original Xbox. Now it's just like, well, I'll find you on Xbox Live.
It's like, it's what I like to call quasi-social. Yeah.
But even if you look at the few successful arcade games in the last, like, 8 years, I mean, you've got DDR that came out, you know, the end of the 90s and mostly in America in early 2000. So that was a very social experience. Even though the game, you don't really play with a lot of people at once, it would have, like, 10 or 15 people around it all sharing the experience.
Right.
And all of the Bimani Music games did that, and Guitar Hero and Rock Band, they all do that now. So it's certainly a major part of gaming. In small doses. Like, you don't see me sitting at home playing these sorts of games, you know, every day.
Play DDR for 6 hours straight. Like,
Okay, well, I used to.
You know what's funny is that, I don't know, sometimes if I'm just, like, playing by myself, if I'm playing a game for too long, I'm just like, man, I've been alone for too long. I need to go and, like, go talk to someone or go meet someone or something like that.
Now, I've got to preface this by saying I love Xbox Live. I think it's an awesome service, and I love what Microsoft's doing, and the connectedness is great. But we run parties all the time where kids roll out of the truck and they're like, man, that just beat the heck out of playing online.
Mm-hmm.
It's just there's no substitute of being there with your friends.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Yep.
All right. Well, I think we've certainly talked a lot about Game Truck. We wanted to have you on as part of, you know, just a... an extra guest host as well. So we should talk about a couple other things before, I guess, we've run out of show. There's not much show left. We actually have Scott from Ontario who's been waiting on the phone to talk to you. I'll get to him after the break.
Very diligent listener.
Yes.
Thank you, Scott.
So we'll save him for after the break. We got a few minutes left now. I said at the beginning of the show that I started playing some iPhone games lately, and I had actually played some iPhone games before the 2.0 update came out, and they were interesting because they were just games that the people made for whoever cracked their iPhone and wanted to play the neat games that people made available even though they weren't officially available. Now comes along Apple's official release of the App Store, and you can get bigger release games. You know, Sega puts out Monkey Ball, there's Crash Bandicoot Racing that just came out, all games made by small and big studios.
Now this App Store thing, do you go to a store and buy it, or is it just like, oh, get it online?
No, you just click an icon and it says, hey, look at all the things available. It's like iTunes,
all right.
On the
but
iPhone.
With a game.
It's on your phone and it's also in your iTunes.
Yeah, I was gonna say it is actually also on iTunes as well. Like I don't know, like podcasts. Like, you look through a list of what you want.
All right, yeah, that's.
And there's a bunch of free stuff, really cool for utilities. But I'm not gonna talk about my iPhone all night. I am gonna talk about the games though.
Yeah.
Primarily, like, two of the biggest releases on it. Our Super Monkey Ball, which came out day one, and then Crash Bandicoot, which I think came out not on day one. It was
doesn't really matter.
Okay,
no.
Okay.
Really.
Okay, what is going on with this Monkey Ball?
Monkey Ball.
Let me just since Rich already had his outburst.
Yeah.
Let me just ask you, because maybe you know what's going on. I don't know. I'm like tilting the thing, and I'm like, I have no idea how much the game thinks I'm tilting this thing, which doesn't make any sense, because to me that would be like the most.
Well, you do have to learn how the game reacts to you, right? And that's true of any game. Think about Monkey Ball on the GameCube.
This is vexing.
Well, think about Monkey Ball on the GameCube, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You learn, it's just you learn very quickly because there's a limited movement with the joystick.
There's
not really a limit.
And it makes sense. This, I don't understand even how this works.
Well, does anybody have a really good accelerometer? I mean, that's the key input component of that thing.
And
they're notoriously inconsistent.
Yeah. I don't know.
iPhone motion sensor is worse than the Wii remote motion sensing.
You know what's really funny?
Let's just put it that way.
I get the same feeling from playing these iPhone games that I do with the Wii stuff, which is relating to what you just said, Scott, which is it's like, you know, I don't know if you guys remember, like, a couple of years ago, or, I mean, even now you buy a steering wheel, right? And then you can configure it, right? And then you calibrate it.
Right.
And sometimes when it's not calibrated, you're like, this mapping's really bad. Like, I'm turning it this way, and it's turning, like, 10 times more than that, and it just doesn't feel right. And sometimes you have to, like, fiddle around with the parameters until it gets to a point, okay, now this feels right, you know? The Wii stuff and this, it's ostensibly, there are no, like, parameters you can calibrate. So it's always, like, a crapshoot.
You can in Crash Bandicoot. You just didn't do it.
Yeah. Well, okay, well, there you go.
When we were at Fall Line, we were working exclusively on Nintendo, and we were working on Wii stuff. And it was like, the analogy we drew was, like, if you pick up a real baseball bat and you swing it, the mass, weight, and length of the bat doesn't change. It's all the variable in your hand. On a Wii and these accelerometers, they change every time you swing it. And so it really becomes difficult to know, you know, it's just that the readings aren't consistent. And it's just the nature of the beast. And it's some weird voodoo in getting that dialed in to be consistent.
Maybe you know more than me. I'm not prepared to actually say that they're that bad or that they don't sense things the same way repeatedly. But certainly it could
within
just be
a tolerance.
The algorithms that are reading the data and interpreting them, they might not be developed very well. And the iPhone certainly is capable of doing things very well. But my issue, what I wanted to bring up, was the fact that they're putting games that aren't really suited well for the hardware that exists and just pushing them out as, you know, big name games. Great people are going to buy it because they trust it's from a big company. It's going to be flashy. And everybody loves Super Monkey Ball on the iPhone because it's the first really flashy game that came out. But I'd love to guarantee that if they released Monkey Ball 2 on the iPhone, it would get maybe 5% of the sales that the first one did, because it's not actually good.
Because they discovered they got screwed.
Yeah, just fun to show off. People, before the App Store actually came out, people were saying it's good. Graphics as good as the DS. No.
Lie.
It doesn't. But apparently all people care about is showing off the graphics. Anyway, we'll be back after the break. We'll take a call. Stay tuned.
Welcome back, guys. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. And we've got Game Truck here.
Game Truck Scott.
Game Truck Scott.
Scott from Game Truck, not the actual.
We should point out it's GameTruckParty.com if you're interested in learning about
you.
It. Of course, if you're not actually local, I don't know, like, are you expanding soon?
Yeah, we're actually selling franchises. We've got, we're in Southern California now, and we've had a lot of interest. Hopefully, we're going to be in Texas real soon. We've got a lot of interest out of there. And we're kind of, you know, growing across the Southwest. I mean, just kids from all over the place. You know, the kids want to do this. Playing together is fun.
That's what I should do. Move to another state and run a franchise.
Maybe, like, expand into other types of vehicles, like game catamarans.
Zambonis.
Or, yeah, game Zamboni.
Now, that's it. That's
the colder climates.
Yes. That's what that's what we want to do.
You could haul actual Mario Karts behind. All right. Anyway,
The sky's the limit.
I promised that we would take Scott, who's been listening. I believe he's actually been listening to the show live while being on hold for about 40 minutes. So,
wow.
So, Scott, you're on the air.
Hey, guys.
Hey, man. Have you been hearing the show? You're familiar with Scott, Game Truck Party, and all that stuff?
Yep.
All right. Fantastic. So, what's up? What can we do for you?
Well, I got a couple of things. Two things for the guest, Scott, not me, Scott. Obviously, I'm not going to ask myself something, but first question is, can you link trucks together?
Yes.
You can link trucks together, like two trucks all playing multiplayer together?
Yep.
You can actually open it up so it's just one really, really long truck?
Well, I don't know that we'd open them up. I mean, what I think you do is you put a team in each truck so that way you don't have any screen cheating.
Oh, you mean linking, like, just linking to play Wi-Fi?
Link them.
I was like, link them like Transformers.
Stack them on top of each other.
A lot's going way beyond.
Future upgrade. Game Truck 2.0 will have, you know, the ability to, you know, morph.
You don't have the Optimus Prime model yet?
Not yet, no.
All right, what's the most popular game that you run?
It depends on the age group. Probably our top three are Halo 3, because we can system link that so 16 guys can play at once.
Yeah.
Guitar
or girls.
Heroes or girls. You know what's really funny is we are seeing one in 10, and it really picked up this last couple months where two out of every one in five parties, two out of 10, I forget what it is, two out of 10 are girls. More and more girls are doing parties. The Wii has opened it up the market, and the music games, Rock Band, Guitar Hero, have really opened the market up to girls.
Cool.
And a lot of them...
Teenage girls, or do you actually get an adult?
Well, I could bore you for 20 minutes on the breakdown of who plays which games and how they play them. And maybe that's another show we should go over. But what we're seeing is teenage girls, 9 through 16, we've done a dozen Sweet 16 parties.
Wow.
But
I imagine you've done some parties, like birthday parties for men my age.
One of my favorite all-time parties
was...
Never for a woman. One of my favorite parties, though, was a Father's Day, where the wives got it for their husbands. So it was a bunch of 40-year-old dudes sitting there playing Call of Duty for 4 hours. Yeah. It was a blast.
So was that, like, the oldest customers you've had, or go to any senior homes?
The oldest people to play in the truck were a couple of octogenarians we had at... we did a home show, and they came in and played Wii Tennis for an hour and kicked their grandkids' butts.
You should play it for for the Red Hat Club or the Purple Dress Club or whatever the hell they're called.
It's something actually we talk about, but there's focus. We focus on parties.
Is Scott still on the phone?
Scott's still on the phone.
Oh, sorry. You still there? Yeah, what was your other question?
One thing was actually when you're back at Rainbow Studios, you said you were sort of daycare. What would you consider your favorite department to work for?
My favorite department? Well, Jerry Seinfeld had this great expression. It's kind of like asking somebody, what's your favorite breath? It's like the next one. What I loved about Rainbow was that every department from test, design, art, I keep tapping, engineering, were all... Everybody cared about their work. Everybody took pride in what they could do. One of the neat things about game development is that everybody can make a difference. Even down to it, like you looked at the administration function, you know, the people that make sure dinners show up on time and packages get sent out. That group took absolutely as much pride in everything they did for the company as the engineers writing the latest shaders. A healthy organization that's full of creativity is full of personal responsibility. So I enjoyed them all. I thought it was a phenomenal group of people we were able to attract, and I think it showed in the games that we made.
So they're all your favorite children, huh?
Yeah. I mean, they had different personalities, you know. The engineers were fearless. The artists were always waiting for the engineers to screw something up for them, but they were always just chomping at the bit to show what they could do, and they always had the most visual stuff that was going on. The test guys took their responsibility they're incredibly serious. They were like, we're going to help you guys find out what's wrong so you can fix it. And so they all had like different personalities, but they were like your children. You love them all.
And how would you characterize the designers?
I was just about to ask if you ever had to send a corrective action down to
Well, I'm going
to
brilliant but retarded. Is that fair?
I get that a lot, actually.
Well, I mean, those are the guys that have to create the vision that everybody else is going to come around. And they have to stick their neck out and go, this is going to be fun. And you know they're going to be wrong. And they know they're going to be wrong. But they have to be the guys to say it. And then somebody goes and builds it and then discovers what's wrong with it. But the best designers are the ones that come back and fix it and tune it in. They sort of find out what's right about the idea and then focus on that and celebrate it and get everybody teamed up around it. And in my experience, 90% of game making is removing the annoying, not actually creating the fun. And great designers seem to have an intuitive sense for that and be able to just carve it away to leave a phenomenal experience.
You know what's really funny about that is that John Carmack had this incredible quote in an interview once where he said that design is more about what not to do than what to do. And you were basically just saying the exact same thing. So
yeah. John Carmack's and I believe awesome that too. Too.
And he's a badass. So.
All right, clearly you have room to grow in removing the annoying.
there's always, that's the thing, it never ends.
It never ends.
There's always more to carve away.
Have you played Ara's game, The Red Star?
I did.
That was a project I worked on right before coming to Rainbow.
Yeah, we couldn't believe did that finally ship?
The ironic thing was it came out last April.
Oh, I didn't see it when it came out last April.
Yeah,
I played it when you brought
like
in
eight copies.
The disc, and we're like, this is a great game. It's a shame it didn't see the light of day.
I think that was actually the reason why Adam hired me. I think he was really impressed with that game.
He was. I remember him talking about it. He's like, you got to check this out. He brought it in, and he's like, these guys are awesome. And you guys are.
Actually a good game. We got many of our listeners.
So you make me blush. Yeah. Huh? What can I say?
It's weird to see a $20 game come out and I not think it's crap.
And 3 years after it's done?
Yeah. Whatever. We can talk about Acclaim for a long time.
We were talking about that before the break. It's amazing that games get printed on discs. It's so challenging to make them.
All right. Let's cover this topic that we said that we were going to cover.
In 30 seconds or less.
In 30 seconds?
Okay.
Let's start it.
You're up for the challenge.
Let's just start it so I don't feel so
bad. How about
bad.
We all just all talk right. at the same time on an opinion so they can hear all of us?
No.
And then it'd be done.
Scott, by the way, thank you for calling. We're going to move on. Thanks.
Okay, so Pen 15's topic. This section sponsored.
Seriously, we've got like a minute and a half.
All right. So what do you guys think? Basically, this discussion is between authorial control over games, which is like, okay, you know, I'm the author, here's the experience, I'm going to make you feel good, I'm going to make you feel like crap, you're going to like this part, you're going to feel uneasy here, that's what you get, that's it. Or, you know, the other way to look at it is, okay, well, I'm a consumer buying this game, and I should be able to basically extract whatever suits my fancy from the game that I enjoy, and I shouldn't have to sit through anything that I don't feel like sitting through.
Yep.
So can I just bring a real-world example into this? Like, when we're talking about, first of all, the question, which we didn't repeat, is should you be able, as a gamer, to just pick what you want to play or take the parts of the game that you want to play and just play those. And
right.
The way this relates to a real-world experience, I guess, is sort of like when there's an unlockable in a game, should it be unlockable or should you, like a mini game, should you be able to play right off the bat?
Well sure. That's a good example, right? Like car racing games. You know, there's one perspective that says that, well, we should, if we have 10 cars in the game, we should just let the player pick from any of the cars because they bought the 10 cars and they deserve to play it.
EA does not agree.
You know?
EA wants you to buy them through microtransactions.
Some designers want you to earn them. EA wants you to buy them.
Right.
But see, I certainly think there's an argument for earning. And unfortunately, of
right.
course, we're at the end of the show.
No time at all.
But maybe this will be the impetus for actually talking about it
yes.
next week rather than just putting
we
it
should
off.
Continue this discussion.
But yes. My 2 seconds. If you're a package of good guys, give the consumer control. If you believe games are an art form, the designers have to have control.
Depends on the game. That's my answer.
There you go.
But our market exists with both. So anyway, we'll talk about that next week. Don't forget to go to GameTruckParty.com if you're actually interested in having a game truck party, especially if you're in the Phoenix area and possibly some other locations.
We love throwing parties.
GameTruckParty.com. So thank you, Scott. And
thank you,
Scott, our listener, for calling in. We'll be back next week with all sorts of new stuff. And don't forget, email me if you have suggestions for questions for the PAX Family Feud event.
Good night, guys.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info in the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your bases belong to us.